Well, verse 10. Verse 10 is my verse tonight. And I had something I wanted to do. I'll wait till Friday night to do that. When you're in a meeting like this, with this caliber of men and this kind of preaching that you're hearing, and as many sermons as you will hear in this week, it is not a reasonable expectation that every sermon will be a home run. Somewhere along the week, somebody's going to get up and preach a forgettable, ho-hum kind of sermon. I think that this is going to be that one. Because some verses just lend themselves to more enjoyable preaching than others. When I saw the itinerary several months ago, I looked at some of these verses. In fact, verse 23, if you look at that one, I feel sorry for the guy that gets that verse, Caesar's household. I'm looking forward to see what he has to say about that. But I saw the itinerary, and I talked to Brother Camilleri because there's a couple of verses I wanted him and I to switch, we being family and all. We obviously are not that much family. Love for the brother has its limits, I understand. But verse number 10 is my verse tonight. And there's just a phrase I want to pick out. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly, that now at the last your care of me hath flourished again, wherein you were also careful, but you lacked opportunity. In verse 10, Paul begins the closing section or the closing paragraph of this letter. And in this closing section, he pins a very personal thank you note to the church at Philippi for a love offering that they had sent. From other clues in the book, we deduct that they had sent it by the hand of Epaphroditus when he came to visit Paul in Rome. And it's evidence of the close bond between the preacher and the church. It had been some 10 years since Paul had first visited Philippi with Silas and started the church. And as far as we know, Paul's travels had never taken him back to Philippi. So it has been a 10-year absence. The church has kept abreast of his ministry. They have even sent offerings to him prior. They knew of some of the troubles that he had encountered. They had not ceased to pray for him. And now, hearing that he's in prison and fearing that he could possibly lose his life, they passed the plate and took a collection and dispatched faithfully Epaphroditus with the love offering. And one of the very reasons for Paul even writing the letter was to thank them for that gift. In many ways, this is a missionary writing a prayer letter back to a supporting church, thanking them for their support. In the next several verses, Paul is going to reference that gift, and he does so to express his contentment of life without the gift. He didn't ask for the gift. He was content without the gift, but he was grateful for the gift. And because he deals with contentment in verse 11 and verse 12, verse 13, verse number 18, I'm going to leave contentment completely out of the equation tonight, because I know that somebody tomorrow will deal with contentment, and I don't want to touch that. But the phrase that has grabbed my attention in verse number 10 is, I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at the last your care of me hath flourished again. Is that not the essence of the relationship that we have to each other in Christ? how that we are to care for one another, how that we are to give to meet needs, how that we are to watch out for one another. John said in 1 John 3 that whosoever hath this world's good and seeth his brother in need and shutteth up his bowels of compassion, how dwelleth the love of God in him? 1 Peter 3, finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Love as brethren, be pitiful, courteous. Galatians 6 and verse 10, as ye have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, but especially those of the household of faith. So what the church at Philippi has done is they have given just as normal Christianity. It is simply the natural expression of someone who has been filled with the love of God. When the love of God is shed abroad in our heart, the most natural expression of that is in our love for one another. Jesus said, hereby shall men know that you are my disciples if you have love one for another. And you can't divorce love from compassion. To love is to care. I don't need somebody to tell me to care for my wife. I don't need somebody to pass a law to tell me that I need to provide for her, that I need to meet her needs, that I need to care for her. I don't need counseling to tell me that I ought to buy her gifts and that I ought to take her on trips and see that she is happy and content. I would do that without a law. But because I love her, and giving and compassion and care, it is an expression of that love. I think that's why Paul said in verse 10, but I rejoiced in the Lord greatly, because God hath put this in your heart. And though the distance separates us, the love of Christ binds us. And he's not rejoicing because he's got a few dollars in his pocket or a coin to jingle in his bag. He says, I rejoice because this is of the Lord. This is evidence of the work that Christ has done in your heart, and my joy for that is greater than my joy for the offering. Your care of me. It has been my privilege to pastor the Victory Baptist Church in Milton, Florida for the past 22 years. Like every preacher, there have been a few rough patches, but it's been more smooth than rough. We've had a whole lot more good days than bad days, a whole lot more sunshine than rain. And for 22 years, I have lived largely off of the giving of my people. It is their giving that has provided my living. Besides a salary and compensation and all of that, they have bought us gifts. They have sent us on trips. They have bought us cars. And there's a greater joy than in having somebody buy you something or do something for you. The greater joy is in knowing that they love you enough to want to do something for you. And when you spend 22 years in one place, you will either grow to love it or despise it. And I would hate to labor in a ministry that depressed me. I don't know. It would be so difficult to preach in a pulpit that I had no heart for, to preach to a people that I didn't love, to labor to build a church that I really didn't care for it. And that is why there is a special bond between a pastor and the people. It is to be a reciprocal, two-way, beneficial to both parties relationship. He is not to be a man who just uses the ministry to enrich himself. That's the Benny Hinn's and the Creflo Dollars of the world. Nor is the church to be blind to the care and the needs of his pastor, their pastor. You see, when God calls a man to a ministry, God places that ministry in that man's heart. If he is a true shepherd and not a hireling, that man will give his very life to that church. And you will know that he's given his life to that church by how that church flourishes under him. He will weep with them. He will laugh with them. He will teach them. He will guide them. He will encourage them. His tears will stain every pew. His blood will mark every part of the building. And his sweat will be spilled there. And no one will ever understand the strain and the pressure and the loneliness that that man goes through. Nor will they understand that his greatest joy is wrapped up into that church. And one of the greatest blessings to that man of God is the spiritual growth of those people. When you are faithful, when you pray, when you worship, when you grow, when you go visit one another, when you work like you have in a week like this, when you function as a body, because that tells him that he's not just spinning his wheels, he's not just wasting his time, because really that touches his life, because this is his heaven on earth. This is his place. This is where he belongs. And whatever benefit that he may bring to the church, he would say that the church brings infinitely greater benefit to him. You see, in some way, you are the source of his sanctification, because it is his opportunity to preach to you that enables the Holy Spirit of God to work in his life as he labors in study. You are his encouragement. You are his joy. In fact, Paul said in verse number 1, he said, "You are my joy and crown. I know I get a crown in heaven one day, but you are my crown on earth." But God has designed it so that as this man ministers spiritual things, the church is to minister carnal things. As he cares for the spiritual state of his church, the church is to care for the material state of his family. Your care of me. Now, there's a number of passages that I could take you to tonight that would bolster that principle. I want you to hold your finger here. I want you to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. I think that 1 Corinthians 9 is the definitive passage on this particular subject. And in 1 Corinthians 9, Paul is laying out an ironclad case for this principle of a church caring for its preacher. And really, chapter 9 is an illustration of a point that he makes in chapter 8. In chapter 8, he has this matter of eating meat that is offered to idols. And there's nothing wrong with it, but there are some younger Christians that are bothered by it. It represents the old life and the old practices, and their conscience was smitten by eating the meat, and they felt like that there was just something wrong about it, even though there's no scriptural command against it. And the principle that Paul gives in chapter 8 is that you have the right to eat it, but you shouldn't eat it if it offends your brother. Love is the limit of liberty. And you have freedom, but you should consider your testimony, you should consider your brother's conscience before you exercise that freedom. And he states that in verse number 13, where he says, "Wherefore, if meat make my brother to offend, I will eat no flesh while the world standeth, lest I make my brother to offend." Now that's a high Christian principle. I have a right to this, but it's not wrong, but I'm more concerned with my brother than I am my own right. So the principle is stated in chapter 8. Now in chapter 9, he's going to illustrate that principle through a personal illustration of how he refused to exercise a right that he had. And the right that he has is to receive compensation from the church at Corinth. But he refused the right for their sake. But in explaining why he didn't take their money, he explains to them that they should give it anyway. Look, if you would, in chapter 9 and verse number 7, stay with me. "Who goeth a warfare any time at his own charges or expenses? Who planteth a vineyard and eateth not of the fruit thereof? Who feedeth a flock and eateth not of the milk of the flock?" Three illustrations. There's a soldier, there's a farmer, there's a shepherd of men who live off of their occupation. Their living comes from their labor. Verse number 9, for it is written in the law of Moses. He's going to quote Deuteronomy 25 and verse 4. Thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. Doth God take care for oxen? The idea is that if you work an ox all day, you ought to feed him. If he's going to tread out the grain, then let him eat some of the grain. And the idea is that you have a right to be supported by what you do. He asked the rhetorical question, doth God care for oxen? Well, he does, but Deuteronomy 25:4 wasn't written for oxen. It wasn't written for their benefit, it was written for our benefit. And by the way, it's interesting in Deuteronomy 25, he doesn't mention any other animals in the chapter. And the chapter's not even about farming. It's about relationships. It's a metaphor that men ought to earn their living from their labor. And what Paul is saying is that if God requires an ox who uses his strength to serve man, he should get his reward. Then a man who uses his strength to serve the church, he should get his reward too. Verse 10. Or saith he it altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he that ploweth should plow in hope, and that he that thresheth in hope should be partaker of his hope. I used to do that. The church that I pastor, a lot smaller when I came there, and the church really paid me very little because that's what I was worth. But as the church grew, the money increased. But I used to labor in hope. I used to hope that the church would grow. I hoped that the money would increase. I hoped that I would get a raise. I hoped that, and they did, and now I don't hope so much. That's what he's talking about. In verse 11, if we have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap your carnal things? So many churches have the mentality, Lord, you keep him humble and we'll keep him poor. And I know there's abuses on the other side, but this verse is talking about this side. Verse 13. Do you not know that they which minister about holy things live of the things of the temple, and they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar? In the Old Testament, there were five offerings that Old Testament priest would bring to sacrifice, and in each of them, the priest who administered the offering kept a portion of that offering for his personal support. That's what he's talking about. Verse 14, even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. And so many times that verse is used to say that you ought to live what you preach, and you should, but that's not what that verse is saying. The verse is saying that if you preach the gospel, you should be able to expect to derive your living from preaching the gospel. The preacher who is faithful to open the word of God has a right to be supported by those that he... Are we okay tonight? Is it okay? By the way, in verse 14, Paul said, even so hath the Lord ordained. This is something that even Jesus himself said. Now you'll have to ask somebody else because I can't find where he said that anywhere in the Gospels. And so either Paul just made that up or Jesus says some things that's not recorded in the Gospels. So Paul establishes his right to be supported by the church. And it doesn't matter if somebody likes it or offended by it, but he still has the right. There is absolutely nothing wrong with him accepting support from the church, but he refused the right. And refusing the right caused him some hardships, but Paul would not take money from the church at Corinth. He said in verse number 12, he said, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. Even though I have that right, I'm not going to exercise that right. Even though not exercising that right causes me some hardships, but I won't exercise the right at the expense of the gospel. So does paying the preacher hinder the gospel? Well, if it does, then you shouldn't pay no preacher. And if it does, what's the point of the first 14 verses anyway? And I think there's some reasons why Paul took this stance in this chapter. For one thing, Paul usually preached in virgin territory, and it would have been something for him to come into virgin territory, start a church, and immediately start taking money from them. Suppose you invite somebody to church and he comes Sunday to the services. It's the first time he's ever been in the building, first time he's ever been to a Baptist church. Brother Logan gets up and he preaches. He walks the aisle and he gets saved. That's wonderful. And as soon as he gets saved, we hand him a stack of offering envelopes. Should he give? Yes. Would that be wise? No. And Paul never took support from churches when he started them. Now later on, when the churches matured, he did. Churches of Macedonia, church at Philippi. I think one of the reasons why that Paul took this stance is because his ministry is primarily to Gentiles. Peter and the others preached to the Jews, and the Jews would already have this in principle ingrained in them from paying the priest. This is like what we did in the Old Testament, so they would carry that over into the church. But Gentiles came out of paganism, and there was no parallel between the pagan priest and the gospel preacher, and all they knew were priests who got fat and rich off of the offerings and were corrupt and crooked. And Paul to be careful that they not think that he's one of them. And so Paul said in verse number 15, I've used none of these things, neither have I written these things that it should be so done unto me. For it were better for me to die than that any man should make my glorying void. I'd rather die than for you to think that I'm a hireling. I will not be accused of using the ministry for money. And Peter talks about those who preach for filthy lucre and those who make merchant of the people. And Paul said, I don't want you to think that of me. But the principle is clear. Don't muzzle the ox that treadeth out the corn. The laborer is worthy of his hire. The minister of the gospel should live of the gospel. He that ministers spiritual things should be ministered to in carnal things. Could I get a witness right there? Look, there's people all over this town that believe that every preacher is a money grubber. And the reason why is because they watch too much TV. And the only thing they know is that charlatan that's on TBN. And I know that there are lazy preachers who are not worth shooting. I know that there are crooked preachers that are stealing money from the treasury. But I'm preaching tonight to Sweet Springs Baptist Church, and you don't have that problem. You don't have a preacher that lives high on the hog and blows money and manipulates and never comes down off of his throne. You got a man of God in your midst. Everybody gets all nervous when we talk about money. Everybody gets all uncomfortable. Are we okay tonight with that? Because I'm not uncomfortable. No. In fact, I like preaching about money. I quite enjoy it. In fact, I like money. I like making money. I like having money. I feel good when I got money in my pocket. I mean, I'm just to be real with y'all, right? Just be real. Money gives me a little bit of swagger. I mean, let's don't act all spiritual like we don't want to touch that filthy mammon, huh? I mean, if you got something you don't want to touch, bring it on up here. I'll touch it for you. Amen. Paul, go back to our text. Go back to our text. I got to preach this verse here. Paul receives this gift from the church at Philippi. It's not just a birthday card. Your care of me. And we could try to spiritualize and make it about something else, but he's talking about money. They sent him some money. They wanted to help the preacher, and he's grateful for it. Now, verse number 10, we're going to go eat in just a minute. But in verse number 10, I want you to write five statements down in this verse right here. And I preach this probably as a commendation to Sweet Springs Baptist Church tonight. But I want you to write five statements down, and I'm going to be done. I tried to go a different direction. This is the only direction the Lord would take me. Statement number one. From verse number 10, Paul did not make his needs known to the Philippians. There's no indication that he's asked them for help. There's no indication that he has shared his troubles with them. The closest thing he gets to it is back in chapter 1 where he says, the things which happened unto me, and then he doesn't tell them the things which happened unto him. And some people have a way of giving a prayer request that is backhanded begging. And Paul didn't engage in any of that. He is purposefully silent to his needs. And some people are hard to give to because you never know if they have any needs. I want to be careful what I say here. We have missionaries that we support that every single letter is a beg sheet. I know they go undersupported. I know the currency exchange kills the dollar. I know there's unexpected expenses. And I'm not knocking that because, hey, they had the faith to go and I haven't gone. I'm still here. But let me help you. When you ask me to pray because your washing machine went kerplunk, what exactly do you want me to pray for? Do you want me to pray that God help you to find a good deal on one? Or are you asking me to send an offering to help you buy one? If you are asking for that, just ask it. Just ask that. But don't get all pious on me. And there is something about the dignity of a man that doesn't have to tell you all his needs. I don't like poor mouthing. I don't like backhanded begging. If I go to a restaurant with you, I'm going to pick up the check or fight you for it. When I come into a town for a meeting, I fill my car up with gas before I get there because I don't need you to fill it up for me. I may not have two nickels to rub together tonight, but I'm not telling you there is no dignity, there is no class, and always broadcasting our poverty and poor misfortune. He does not tell them his need. Statement number two. Since he doesn't tell them his need, the church is going to have to work hard at knowing how to help him. They're going to have to find out on their own, apart from any prompting by the apostle. Somebody's had to do some inquiring. Somebody's had to do some investigating. Somebody has to care enough to ask. You know, sometimes in caring for one another, you just have to care enough to ask. Sometimes you just have to notice that the tires on the widow's car is getting a little bald. Sometimes you just have to notice that child whose eyes glasses are broken and put together with scotch tape. Sometimes you just have to recognize that man's been out of work for several weeks and they might need some groceries. And sometimes you have to care enough to investigate. In Acts chapter 11, Agabus the prophet, he predicted this famine that is going to come throughout the world. And he mentions this coming famine, but he doesn't say anything about what to do about it. But the church at Antioch, they figured if there's coming a famine, it's going to hit the church at Judea. And in Judea, their brothers and sisters are going to get hit hard. And the gospel had come to them from Judea. And so the Bible says that they determined to send relief to the brethren which dwelt in Judea. They just added 2 + 2, got the 4. They cared enough to have their eyes open. Now, I encourage you tonight as a church to have your eyes open to see the need. Everybody that joins our church, wants a ministry. Preacher, we the working kind. We don't like to sit still. Get us involved, right? I mean, get us plugged in. You know, I only have so many Sunday school classes. Everybody can't work in the children's ministry. That's what they're talking about. Hey, if you want to minister tonight, how about the ministry of hospitality? How about find that widow lady and just go by our house and just snoop around, see if there's anything that needs a fix. Hey, how about noticing that man that's out of work and slip a little money to his wife? And why don't somebody be on the tire committee and just go by the preacher's car every once in a while and see how the tread is wearing on those tires? You got to work hard at this. You got to investigate. You got to check things out. Don't just say, hey, if you need anything, call me. They're not going to call. You got to make it your business to stick your nose in there and see if there's a need. They're going to have to work hard to find out what he needs. Statement number three, write it down. It took sacrifice for this church to send a gift to Paul. Now, if somebody wanted to, they had a whole lot of reasons why this don't make sense. They were poor. 2 Corinthians 8 tells us that. They had already given to help others out. They sent an offering to the church of Jerusalem. So, hey, let somebody else take care of this need. There's the real logistical problems of even getting the money to Paul. They just can't drop a check in the mail. 700-mile journey from Philippi to Rome, and consider the dangers by land and by sea. Consider the sacrifice of Epaphroditus that has to leave his family and his business. And we know from chapter 1 and verse 29, verse 20, 28, 29, and 30, we know that the winds of persecution were already beginning to blow in Philippi, and sometimes we're inclined to set money aside for a rainy day in difficult times. And sometimes the giving dries up a little bit when the going gets a little rough. And besides, Paul's being accused of treason. Do you really want to associate with him right now? And if you send him some money, the Roman government might see you as supporting the revolution. And the church in Philippi, the city of Philippi, really is in good graces with Rome. Do you want to mess that up? Every time that the preacher gets up and says, you know, we ought to take up an offering for that missionary. Boy, we ought to give an offering for that young couple. Boy, we ought to see what we can do to meet that need. Some dried up Baptist cross his arms. So it's a bad time to be taking an offering. I mean, the Federal Reserve is going to raise the interest rates. And the economy's all crazy. Obama's still president. Huh? Okay tonight? Look, listen. If that's you tonight, relax, Jasper. I'm not even preaching to you, all right? I'm preaching to the fellow sitting next to you that's not a stingy tightwad. If you don't want to give, just keep your money in your pocket, because it's never been the money bags that met the need. It's always been the guy with a whole little bit of money and a whole lot of heart. And if you're going to care for others, it's going to take some sacrifice. Paul didn't make his needs known to the Philippians. The church has to work hard at knowing how to help him. It takes sacrifice. Statement number four, I'm hurrying. Sometimes you will not be able to give. Wherein you are also careful, but you lacked opportunity. They wanted to for a long time, but the opportunity just wasn't there. They're a poor church. Sometimes the funds just weren't available. Hard to keep track of where Paul's at. Not sure where his travels have taken him. There were legitimate obstacles that prevented them from giving. I can't possibly give to every need that I see. I can't build every building that every missionary needs to build. I can't support every man that's out of work. I can't possibly meet every need. But just because I can't do everything doesn't mean that I can't do something. And sometimes the offering plate is passed and you just don't have to give. You can't give money you don't have. But I believe that God sees the heart. And I think He somehow counts what you would give if you'd had it to give it. But sometimes you just don't have opportunity to meet the need. Paul didn't let his needs be known. They got to work hard at knowing what he needs. It's going to take great sacrifice. Sometimes you don't have opportunity. Statement number five, I'm done. But when you can, you should. I rejoice greatly that your care of me hath flourished again. So I say to Sweet Springs Baptist Church tonight, does your care of your pastor flourish? You know what the word flourish means? One of the definitions is ostentatious, showy, flashy, something to boast in. Are you proud of how you care for one another? And are you proud of how you care for your preacher? If ever there was a man, and I'm not for man worship tonight, you understand. But if ever there was a man that could live in verse 9, that's your preacher. I don't know that he would say it, but you can follow that man. You see how he walks before you. You see how he carries himself. You see his family. You see his testimony in this community. One of the best preachers in this building is not even preaching this week. And you even know when you come to church and there's somebody else preaching, you're a little disappointed. Because really, you really hear your preacher. I could take you tonight to a dozen churches that would love to have a man like that as their preacher. There's people that love God as much as you love God. And they're sitting in some dead, dried up church, starving for truth, trying to pull something off of sermon audio to feed their soul throughout the week. I the first time I've ever been here, pulled up into the parking lot on Monday, and I said, wow, the buildings are pristine, everything is clean and organized and together, and this church is a reflection of this pastor. It ought to be to your pride that your care of him flourishes. I have no idea how things happen around here. But the greatest thing that you can do as a church is to make sure that that man is well taken care of. I'm just preaching my verse. You know when his birthday is? Coming soon, ain't it? Do you know when her birthday is? What about their anniversary? You ever send them on a trip? One of the best things you can do for preachers is to send him on a trip far away from you. It is my great privilege tonight that the church that I pastor flourishes in their care for me. I won't preach it tonight, but that principle of elders counted worthy of double honor. 7 or 8 years ago, my church took that literally. And on a Sunday night, doubled everything they paid me. My church does me so well. They don't know this. But the last two raises they give me, I didn't take it. I said, they're doing too much already. I'm doing no more. Mays Jackson took a little church over in Georgia, I think. And just a little church, and church was growing. He said one day one of his deacons came into church and to the men's prayer meeting and said, Father, said, I'm so upset. He said, I was talking to one of my friends at work that goes to the First Baptist Church downtown. He said, I asked them what they pay for their preacher. You know they pay their preacher $100 more a month than what we pay our preacher. Well, you fellas know our preacher's a whole lot better than that fellow down there at the First Baptist Church. I think it's a shame that he'd be making more than our preacher. I think we need to vote tonight, and we need to vote that we pay our preacher more than what they pay their preacher. And I think we ought to just put it in the minutes that if they ever raise their preacher, we raise our preacher. Somebody asked Mays Jackson, did you ever pray for a raise? He said, oh, no. He said, I sure pray for that other preacher, though. Paul said, I don't need it. I'm content without it. But you gave it. And I sure am grateful for it. Take care of me.